radio. We'd sit and close our eyes and use our imagination. A comedy, mystery, a fireside chat. Together we sat, listening nightly to our favorite show. Radio, oh, why did you ever go? Oh, won't you please come back and entertain us? I long to turn the dial again to hear the past smile again. Radio, I miss you so.
Once again, it's time for Yesteryear. A look back at your favorite dramas, westerns, comedies, and musical variety shows from the golden age of radio. Here's your host for Yesteryear, Craig Roberts.
Well, thank you, sir, and let me again echo Dave's welcome to another edition of Yesteryear. On today's program, a special salute to the men of the Army Air Corps during the Second World War. Cavalcade of America with Soldiers in High Boots. That'll be coming up a little bit later on in the program, but to get things started, we'll continue with part two of our two-part series from Suspense entitled Donovan's Brain, starring Orson Welles. Suspense, radio's outstanding theater of thrills, was first aired on CBS in June of 1942. Suspense dealt in life or death situations. Then, through characterization and audio coloring, little touches were added to heighten the sensation of impending doom. The slow tightening of the knot. Suspense opened to the ringing of soft church bells intermingled with stinging music. By the fall of its first year, Joseph Kearns, also known as the Man in Black, was aboard as the narrator. The Man in Black disappeared by the time the program went to 60 minutes in 1948. Here now, from May 25th of 1944, Orson Welles, starring in part two of Donovan's Brain, a tale calculated to keep you in suspense from yesteryear.
Major Bowes, I miss the shadow nose, Fred Allen's alley folks, the laughter of Duffy's Tavern, Helen Trent. Oh, then we went to Can You Top This? Suspense in the Whistler sent those shivers up our spines. Uncle Don, I wish that he was on. Jack Armstrong, Merton, Marge, Amos, and Andy.
This is the Man in Black, here to introduce this weekly half hour of Suspense. Tonight from Hollywood, we again bring you Mr. Orson Welles in the second of two consecutive performances starring Mr. Welles as the protagonist of Kurt Siodmak's novel, Donovan's Brain. The producer of Suspense and its sponsors, the Roma Wine Company of Fresno, California, felt this story so unusual that it merited more than our usual time. So in somewhat of a departure from established radio formulas, we are bringing you the story of Donovan's Brain in two parts. Part one you heard last Thursday, and tonight you will hear part two, the completion of Donovan's Brain. And with performance of Orson Welles as Dr. Patrick Corey, we again hope to keep you in suspense.
As I sit outside my laboratory door writing under the heading Experiment 87, this final entry in my casebook, I know that these are the last words I shall ever write upon this earth. For those who seek some explanation, I refer them simply to this casebook. Let them read it carefully. Perhaps they may then in some measure understand, if not condone, the awful circumstances under which I have been driven to the most appalling crime against God and nature that it has ever been the fate of mortal man to perpetrate. August 24th, it's now 6 weeks, exactly 42 days, since I began the experiment. For 6 weeks by artificial means alone, I've kept alive a human brain, completely detached from the body, floating in a bath of serum nourished by a synthetic blood plasma fed through its arteries by an electric pump. It has remained alive, not only alive, but I have succeeded in communicating with it. For I've even induced new growth of brain cells and so tremendously increased its mental faculties that by sheer brain power alone, it has actually been able to communicate its thoughts to me. And each day, my communion with that living, pulsing mass of gray matter that was the brain of William Donovan becomes stronger and stronger. Even now, I sense it striving to reveal some plan to me, something so truly world-shaking in its implications that only such an organism, developed to a point thousands of years ahead of its time, could ever have conceived it. So far, I sense this only, but soon I shall know. Indeed, I shall be partner in its execution. What a fool I was ever to have considered for a moment my wife's demand that I end the experiment. It's because I refused, of course, that Janice left me a week ago without so much as a word of explanation or farewell. Even my son David and my assistant Schrott are privy to this conspiracy to thwart me, for when I ask about Janice, they pretend to know nothing. They seek to avoid my questions. But the brain will live. Yes, I can hear it now. Its delta waves quite audible over the amplifying system I've arranged for it. Almost as though it were calling to me, trying to speak to me. The brain will live. Donovan? What is it? What are you trying to tell me? Go on, Donovan. I'm listening. Go on. Go on. Go. Who is it?
It's me, Patrick and David.
What do you want?
You want to talk to you, David?
I have no time to talk. I'm busy. I'm sorry. Go away, I tell you. I'm busy.
Please,
Patrick. Can't you two leave me alone? All right. What is it? What is it?
Patrick, won't you come into the study with us for a few minutes?
What have you got to say? You can say right here. You know I can't leave the laboratory.
Dad, it's only that, well, we wanted to talk to you in private.
Well, don't tell me that you're afraid of this poor mass of brain cells here.
It's not that, Dad, but
never mind, David. At least turn that thing off then, will you, Patrick?
What difference would it make? Could still hear, couldn't it? Well, what is it then?
Well, it's about Mother.
So, she put you up to this, did she? I thought the truth would come out sometime.
Dad, listen.
She's trying to stop this experiment from the beginning. She thought she could blackmail me into quitting by leaving me, and she still does. Now she's using you as a go-between.
Now, Patrick, listen a minute, won't you?
I've heard enough.
We haven't heard a word from Janice. We don't even know where she is. That's what we've come to talk to you about.
Oh, have you? How could I know where she is?
Well, because you were the last person seen with her, Dad.
I was.
Don't you remember, Patrick? You took her into town with you. You wouldn't tell any of us why.
Yes, of course, the moment I've forgotten, but what of it?
Well, don't you remember what happened then?
Of course I remember. She left me, that's all.
Where, Dad? Where did she leave you? What were you doing?
I don't know. We were in some big public building, city hall, courthouse, taxis or something. Next thing I knew, she'd simply disappeared.
Is that all? Didn't she say anything? Didn't she at least tell you why she was going?
No, I remember what she said. It's been a week or more. I've hardly slept. You know, I've been working night and day.
Yes, that's just it, Patrick.
What do you mean by that?
Patrick, you say this. The brain communicates with you. Tells you things about his past life. Suggests thoughts.
Yes.
If the brain can make you think of things, mightn't it also be able to make you forget things?
You're out of your mind.
Dad, are you sure? Are you sure you don't know what's happened to Mother?
No, I tell you, I don't know.
Patrick, don't you see what you might have done?
What?
In heaven's name, stop now while there's still time.
Get out of here.
While there's still time to help Janice, if there is. While there's still time to help yourself. Shut off the current. Let the brain die. Kill it, Patrick. Kill it.
Get out, both of you. Get out. Get out. August 26th, the brain continues to communicate thought fragments more and more easily, but nothing further on what I've come to think of as the plan. I'm now sleeping a great deal, but my dreams are becoming increasingly troublesome, although I'm at a loss to analyze them. Most frequent is a sort of vast cosmic ballet presided over by the colossal figure of a young man whom I seem to recognize, yet I never see his face. It's as though the entire population of the Earth were moving past him in review at his command.
David!
Head to death.
Never mind. Now, here, help me with Trot. He's fainted.
No, no, David. Don't let him.
It's all right now.
Here's a glass of water. What's the matter? You're trembling all over.
You're looking at me that way.
Look, I'm frightened after death.
Dad, you...
What happened here? Anyway, I came and found you on the floor with your hands around your own throat. Dad meant for me. Why's your luggage all packed?
I was going to leave.
Leave? In the middle of the night? Why?
Because
the fuse box has been opened. It was you, Trot. You were going to shut off the current. You were going to kill the brain.
Patrick, you tried to strangle me.
What?
It's true, Dad. That's why I had to slap you.
But that's absurd. I came in here and found Schrott with his hands around his own throat. He was strangling himself.
Dad, please, think a minute. Nobody can strangle himself.
Look at these marks on my throat. Oh. You think I could have done that?
Well, it's not possible, and yet...
It's true, Patrick, that I tried to shut off the current. I was afraid for you. But as I opened the fuse box, I heard the delta waves in the laboratory suddenly become stronger and louder than they'd ever been before. And then...
Then I...
Yes.
Then the brain knew?
Yeah, you even spoke in Donovan's voice,
Donovan's
Patrick.
Donovan's voice, his
that
voice.
That recurring phrase of his, sure, 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 in his very tones, his very accent.
Sure, sure.
You've created a monster, Patrick.
It has the power to make me commit murder. The brain must die.
Pull the switch in the fuse box, Patrick. It will only be a matter of seconds,
yes.
And then...
Yes, I...
But I... You've got to, Patrick.
Schrott, David, help me. I can't move. Come
yes,
to me.
You...
Pull the switch, honey. Schrott, David, go on. You? You too?
It's paralyzed, Dispatch.
Huh?
The brain won't let itself be killed.
Then it has the power to live on. And on. To command us as long as we live. To make us do anything it wants. To kill. Murder.
Dad, what are we going to do?
Listen.
The brain.
It's laughing. Laughing.
September 7th. Schrott has left. He had to, of course, for his own protection, if nothing else. Before he left, he swore to eternal secrecy, going to try to find Janice. The very thought that any harm might come to her through me is enough to drive me almost mad. As for David, although he's strong enough to prevent any untoward accidents, I don't know, he's volunteered to stay with me. He'll sleep at night behind locked doors. We must devote every faculty we possess together and independently to finding a way of destroying the brain. Perhaps while it sleeps, although it seems to have developed tremendous powers of the subconscious, which operate even in sleep. The recurring dream, the now oppressive sense of some further task to be performed continues. Janice were only here. Even her presence, I know, would help immeasurably to combat this fearful thing. Terrible thought crosses my mind. Could Trot have left if the brain had not, for some reasons of its own, actually wanted him to leave? September 10th. My thoughts are less and less my own. The dream of the young giant bestriding the earth, the figure without a face, pursues me now, even in my waking hours. Increasingly, I seem to live in a world of evil fantasy, peopled and controlled by the mind of William Donovan.
Sure.
not much time, but time enough. Time enough. Sure, sure, sure. Time enough. Sure, sure.
Hello? Who is it?
Patrick?
Oh, Janice. Janice.
My darling.
Janice.
Hello. Patrick.
Sweetheart. Darling.
How are you, Patrick?
Oh, I'm well enough. But Janice, where have you been?
Where have I been?
Yes, we had no idea. I've been half crazy worrying about you. Did Schrott finally find you?
Yes. Yes. Schrott found me.
Janice, why did you leave me that day? Why didn't you at least tell me? Where did you go, darling?
I was with friends.
Well, did Schrott tell you anything?
No, nothing special.
Well, Janice, I know I haven't been a very good husband these last months. I haven't been very kind or very considerate or even civilized. I haven't been myself, Janice.
I know, Patrick. My poor darling.
If you'd only known how I missed you after you left. I needed you. I need your help, Janice.
I know, Patrick.
Terribly.
I came back to help you. But...
But what?
Where's David?
Well, he's asleep in the next room. Lately he's tried to make it a point to sleep only when I didn't. Trying to keep an eye on things.
Patrick, I'm going to help you. All I can. Any way I can. But first, I want to take David away.
David? Why?
Because I don't think it's good for him to be here.
No?
I don't think that you... Patrick, I don't want to torment you. It's only that perhaps we can find a way if we know all the facts.
What, Janice?
Don't you know, really, where I was?
No, how could I?
Don't you remember where you took me?
Well, I took you out of...
You took me to a psychiatric clinic.
Psychiatric clinic?
You had me committed to a madhouse.
No, it's Janice.
No, not you, Donovan.
Donovan.
It was because I tried to make you stop the experiment.
Yes.
Kill the brain. As you left me there, you even spoke in Donovan's voice. Sure, 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 you said.
Sure, sure.
I thought they were the last words I would ever hear you speak.
Oh, Janice, forgive me. Forgive me, darling.
I couldn't persuade anyone. I was sane.
Oh, sweet.
After what you told them, everything I said only made them think I was mad. I'm not mad. Am I, Patrick? I'm not mad. Am I?
Be gone for some 3 hours. I've sent her into town for Dr. Zanger, the psychiatrist. Maybe he can help, but now, suddenly, I'm overcome with the thought of the humiliation I shall have to suffer when other medical men become aware of the position I'm in. It'll be the end of my career, my reputation, all my hopes. Folly to think that Zanger would keep it to himself. Indeed, he'd have no right to. I can bear it if I must, but another way, a possibility, occurs to me, and I've been thinking it over. There's no harm in trying it in any event. I must try. I have 3 hours. David! David!
Yes, Dad?
David, what's your blood type? Do you know your blood type?
Matter of fact, I don't think I do. Why?
No matter. We can easily find out. David, I think at last I know a way.
To kill the brain?
It's simple. It's perfectly natural. And yet 9 chances out of 10 is something Donovan had never known about. I'll do it myself. Unfortunately, my blood type and his they're the same.
Transfusion?
Of course. I have to replenish the blood substance periodically. Anyway, it's about time to do it again. I've always used my own because it was the same type as his. But if yours is a different type, the right type, David.
You mean the wrong type?
Yes, you've given the wrong... The brain will die given the wrong type.
Yeah, it's possible.
I'm sure of that. I know it.
But suppose the brain knows it. It knows other things.
I've thought of that. It's a chance we'll have to take if you're willing, David, my boy.
Of course I am.
Then we'll take the blood sample now. Come into the laboratory.
I only have the right blood type.
Sure.
Rather the wrong type.
If you haven't, we'll find someone who has, maybe Schrott.
Now, lying down there on the table, David. We want a tourniquet on your arm. Here,
I'll
a small syringe will do it.
Go ahead, I'm ready.
David, don't watch me. It'll be easier if you don't. For me.
That's a funny one. Coming from you.
Well, doctors are never quite as steady with members of their own family, you know. Ready?
Sure.
Ready? Here we are. You all right?
Yeah.
You'll be through in just a second.
You're getting it all right?
Yes, sure. Just a second now.
Dad, I'm sleepy.
You'll be over it in a minute.
But what's the matter? Why am I so sleepy?
You'll be all right.
Sleepy. So sleepy.
Sure. That's what an anesthetic is for. Make you sleep. I was somewhat surprised to find the instruments sterilized, already laid out, but I worked more rapidly and skillfully than ever before in my life, I think. I made an incision just below the hairline, laying back the scalp as far as the base of the skull. I trepanned the cranium at 2 centimeter intervals, working back and downwards to the upper edge of the occipital bone. With the Geely saw, I cut through the connecting bone structure and removed the entire top of the cranium, placing it in saline solution to preserve it. I made a semicircular incision in the dura mater, laying it to one side, exposing the brain. As I dissected out the facial, auditory, and pneumogastric nerves to free the medulla oblongata, I became conscious of an insistent clamoring, something like a mounting hysteria in the distant reaches of my mind. Almost as strong as the irresistible compulsion that drove me on. But my hand did not falter. With a sure stroke, I severed the spinal cord just below the first cervical nerve. As I make this last entry with that awful guilt upon my soul, even now I cannot fully comprehend how it has been possible for any man, by mortal or immortal means, to be driven to such a crime. Even the divinity himself did not demand of Abraham that final sacrifice of expiation. When he, with his only begotten son, ascended the Mount of Olives. Perhaps Schrott is right. Perhaps there is indeed in man some spark of the divine that will elude our test tubes and our laboratories until the end of time. Perhaps that is the one thing that even Donovan did not foresee. I only know that at the instant my son died under my own hand, I was set free. At that instant, I saw and understood for the first time that monstrous plan born in the brain of William Donovan, of which I was to be the instrument. It was the plan I had glimpsed but never grasped in the recurring dream. Donovan did aspire to the domination of the world. And with those tremendous mental faculties that I myself had given him, it was literally within his power to become the absolute ruler of all mankind. Only one thing was lacking, a body, a young, strong body into which those ever-growing brain cells could graft and affix themselves to live on. And on, perhaps, for centuries. He chose the body of my son, and now... my son. At last, too late. I am free to destroy this foul thing of my creation. I know it as surely as I know that my own life must be forfeit. And the brain also knows. I can hear the disturbed, erratic oscillations of the delta waves coming through the laboratory door. There's no room left in me now for fear. I shall take the 6 steps from the desk where I'm writing this across to the laboratory door. How often I've taken them in happier times. I shall open the door, close it behind me for the last time.
right finish to the mortal life of Patrick Arthur Corey and the brain of William Horace Donovan. May others learn from the record I leave here the lessons I've learned so bitterly and profit by them. And for the things that I have done, may God have mercy on my soul.
Phoenix, Arizona, September the 15th. The bodies of Dr. Patrick Arthur Corey and his son David were found in Dr. Corey's own laboratory early today. Young Corey had apparently died on the operating table as a result of a delicate brain operation performed by his father. In the case of Dr. Corey, medical authorities gave us their opinion that he might have died of shock as a result of the unsuccessful operation on his son. A curious feature of the case was the fact that numerous pieces of tissue identified as being from a human brain were found scattered about the laboratory floor, while a larger section of brain was found in the midst of an elaborate apparatus, evidently part of a scientific experiment. Medical authorities stated, however, that they were unable to explain the nature of the apparatus and that the brain itself was in such a state of decomposition as to indicate that it had been dead and slowly decaying for at least 3 months. Dr. Corey is survived by his wife, Janice. She was committed to the county asylum for the insane late this afternoon. Burial of Dr. Corey will be at the Mount of Olives Cemetery.
And so closes Donovan's Brain, Part 2. The completion of 2 half-hour presentations of Kurt Siodmak's story, presenting Orson Welles, a star of Suspense. Suspense is produced and directed by William Spear. Next Thursday, you will hear Ida Lupino and Vincent Price in Suspense.
This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
From May 25th of 1944, it's been part 2 of Donovan's Brain, starring Orson Welles, from Suspense. In a moment, a salute to the men of the Army Air Corps during the Second World War. It's the Cavalcade of America with soldiers in high boots as Yesteryear continues.
You're listening to listener-supported Swing Street Radio. Swing Street Radio, where the big bands swing. The sounds of the golden age of radio continue with Yesteryear. Here's Craig Roberts.
The Cavalcade of America, one of the most intelligent and longest-running of all prestige programs, was first heard on CBS in October of 1935. By 1939, it was a regular part of the NBC lineup. It dramatized incidents from American history and literature using top talent from Broadway and Hollywood. In addition to a staff of house writers, special Cavalcade projects were put together by such as Carl Sandburg, Stephen Vincent Benet, Maxwell Anderson, and Robert Sherwood. Sandburg even appeared as a narrator for the 1941 production of his own Native Land. It was a big prestige show in the truest sense, carving out an area of expertise and competence that went unchallenged in all of radio. With its high budget, some $7,000 a week even in 1943, the show paid top rates for its work. Throughout its 18-year run, Cavalcade was sponsored by DuPont. Initially heard on Wednesdays, it moved to Mondays in 1938, and then in 1941, finally back to Tuesdays. It was last heard in March of 1953. Here now, from April 26th of 1943, is The Cavalcade of America with Soldiers in High Boots, starring John Hall, from Yesteryear.
The Cavalcade of America presents John Hall in Soldiers in High Boots.
is to jump.
Giraffe!
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 Our play tonight is based on exploits of the paratroopers, daredevils of the infantry. Starring John Hall as Private Jefferson Smith, we present Soldiers in High Boots on the Cavalcade of America.
Your order is to jump.
To run!
That's one. Keep going fast now. Jump. Two.
To run!
Three.
To run!
Four.
To run!
Five. Six. Come on, jump, soldier.
I can't, sir.
What's your name? Smith? Okay, get back out of the way. Back in the cabin there. Okay, next. Keep coming there. Jump.
Come in. Yes?
Private Smith, sir. Company D. Doctor, there's something I wanted to ask you.
Yes, ask away.
Well, sir, I thought you being a doctor.
Yes? Well, I think I can guess what's on your mind, Smith. You failed to jump from the plane this morning. That it?
Has the jump master reported that to you already?
I don't even know who your jump master was, soldier. But I get visits like yours at least once a week.
Well, then, can you tell me what's wrong with me, doctor, and what,
yes,
what to do about it?
I can tell you what's wrong with you, all right, but as for the cure, that's another matter.
Yeah, but all the guys in my company, they got me tagged as yellow. And, well, I'm willing to take any one of them on to prove otherwise.
Well, you wouldn't prove anything that way, Smith.
No, I guess not. Well, then, why don't I jump like the others?
Acrophobia. It's a Greek word. It means fear of high places.
Acrophobia, huh?
Probably something in your childhood caused it. You were frightened by some high place or other. A psychoanalyst could take care of it, if it needs to be taken care of.
But the guys in my company, they think I'm scared.
No, there's nothing to be ashamed of, soldier. It doesn't mean you're a coward.
But why do I freeze up just when I'm supposed to jump?
You act as though you were the only man who ever froze up on a parachute jump. Now, don't worry so much about it. Matter of fact, I'm the same way. You couldn't get me to jump out of one of those planes.
Yeah, but if I don't jump this afternoon, I'm out of the paratroops.
Well, then make the jump. Yell Geronimo the way the other boys do. And don't worry about it. That's the worst thing you can do, worry. If you start getting worried about your fear, you'll bump into another long Greek word. Phobophobia.
What's that?
Fear of being afraid. That's really a nasty one. Steer clear of that one. Now go on. Make your jump. You'll be okay.
Hey, Farmer, how much longer we got before the afternoon jump?
Oh, we ought to get started pretty soon, Takes. We're supposed to go up around a quarter after.
Oh, hey, Mac, if you gotta play that thing, play something cheerful.
Say, who'll take a bet on Smitty?
Smitty? What about him?
You know. He went up in the second flight this morning and he wouldn't make his jump.
Yeah, he froze up like an icicle.
Texas, when you're up 5,000 feet and you gotta jump, you got a right to be scared.
Yeah. And if you say you're not scared yourself, Texas, you're just a plain a lion. So, who'd take a bet on whether he jumps this afternoon?
Well, if he don't jump this afternoon, they'll jump him right back into the infantry. Two times and out. That's what the colonel told us.
Don't worry. He'll jump all right.
Oh, so I have no takers, huh? I'm surrounded by citizens who have no sporting instinct. All close students of the dollar.
Hey, shut up, will you? Here he comes now.
Hmm?
He must be going up again, all right. He's got to shoot. All right, come on, we better hurry.
Oh, it's my misfortune to have in my platoon nobody but citizens who figure that anything involving humans is 6-5 against.
Yeah, it's us. Free ticket for everybody, all the way up and all the way down again.
Well, boys, after this trip, we'll all be paratroopers. I hope, I hope, I hope. Hi, Smitty.
Hi, Farmer.
Missed your jaw. You feeling okay?
Yeah, I'm okay. Why not?
Well, the way you usually tie on the old feed bag, I was just wondering.
You thinking about this morning? I know what's on your mind. You figured you'd come over and talk to me, keep my mind off this morning. Well, listen, farmer. Get back with your pals. Start thinking about your farm back in Iowa. I'm okay.
Sure, kid, sure.
Never mind me, and I don't want to talk.
Okay, Smitty. Have it your way.
I'll tell you, I do so remember something about a sparrow. It's in the Bible.
Oh, it's a funny thing.
What's funny?
Well, on the ground, that big lug is all guts. Get him up here a few thousand feet, and he tries to remember stuff out of the Bible.
That's right. That's it. A sparrow falls anywhere in the world, and God knows about it and can put out his hand to keep it from harm.
You know, farmer, I'm not scared to jump. I got it all reasoned out. But I look down and...
I know.
I get sick. I'm not scared, but I get sick.
Sure, sure. That happens to lots of guys.
As soon as I hear the jump master give the order, then I freeze up.
Oh, you'll get over that. You get so you like it after a while.
All right, you guys. Everybody, stand up. Fix your ripcords to the guy line.
Remember the sparrow.
No talking in the ranks, sir. And when I give the order to jump, I want you guys to start jumping. I want all 18 of you out of this plane inside of 10 seconds. That means no delays from any of you. Any guy who hesitates, I'll pull him right back out of the way. Open the exit door.
Farmer.
I'm right in back of you, kid.
Okay, jump.
Turn
around!
Move.
Turn around!
Keep moving forward, Smitty. It doesn't ever stop, see?
My hands. My hands, farmer.
Oh, you should see me shaking, kid. 14,
15, 16, 17. 17. Go ahead, soldier.
I don't think I can, sir.
Go on, Smitty.
All right, step back. Out of the way.
No. No. No, I'm gone. Geronimo!
Well, that's all I've got to say, men. Those of you who took the second jump yesterday completed your training. You're now full-fledged paratroopers. Now, one more thing. As of this moment, all leaves and liberties are canceled. Report to your quarters and prepare for immediate embarkation. Full field equipment. You have exactly 1 hour. I'd like to tell you where you're going, but unfortunately, I don't know. Your guess is as good as mine. Anyway, you're a fine bunch of paratroopers, and wherever you go, I know you'll do a good job. Good luck, and good hunting. Company dismissed.
Hey, Farmer.
Well, Smitty, old boy, we duded it.
Yeah, we're in, Farmer. Oh, and look, fella, thanks for yesterday.
Don't thank me, Smitty. Nobody pushed you. You jumped.
Hey, gentlemen. Gentlemen, I have a little sporting proposition. Five will get you 10. Hey, Texas, come here. Get in on this.
Oh, got another sure proposition for us to bet on, Mac?
What's the bet?
Well, now, first let me ask you a question. Where do you think the high command has decided to utilize our talents?
Well, I got a hunch we're going to be heading across that blue Pacific.
How about you, Farmer? What do you say?
Well, I got different dope. Understand there's going to be a little excitement up around Alaska.
Considering the way they've been training us, I think it's going to be Ireland.
Okay, boys, it's a bet. Now I'll tell you, gentlemen, where you're going. Africa. Sunny Africa. Yes, sir, boys. Africa where the sun always shines.
Rain. Is that all it does in England? Rain?
Hey, Smitty, you got another cigarette?
Sure, here you are, fella.
Look at that rain. Too wet even to go down to the pub for a beer. Who's got the dice?
Oh, relax, Texas. I bet it's not raining down in Africa anyway.
Yeah, Africa. I thought we were heading straight for Africa, Mac. We've been in England 2 months.
Oh, bye. I wonder how our old outfit's doing.
You know what I wonder is why we didn't get to go to Africa.
Oh, they got their reasons why we didn't go south, Farmer.
Yeah, such as which?
Well, I'd rather not say.
What do you mean by that, Texas?
No hard feelings, Smitty, but you're the guy who went chicken on a jump once. Figure it's on your record.
Oh, why don't you keep your yap shut, Texas?
Now listen, Mac, you and the Farmer both agree that maybe Smitty was the reason we didn't get to go.
Still got that on your mind, eh, Texas?
If you can call it a mind.
Well, what about it, Smitty? You sure you wouldn't freeze up again?
Cut it out, Texas. They aren't keeping all of us here just because of Smitty.
You said not all of us, Farmer.
Well, Smitty, it probably is on your record that you didn't jump once, but...
Well, if that's the case, why didn't they throw me out of the paratroops?
Well, that's reasonable.
Ah, Well, the trouble with you guys, you got nothing better to do than sit around and dream up beats for why we haven't seen any action. Did you ever stop to wonder why they were so anxious to teach us how to ski?
Well, we weren't the only guys they trained to ski, Smitty.
I'm not saying we were, but the four of us, we're supposed to be pretty hot at skiing, aren't we? So long as we're all figuring out why we didn't go to Africa, I'll make my bet it's because they're going to send us in the other direction.
Gosh, Smitty, you really think so?
Well, how do you figure it?
Oh, fine. Now we're the second front. Hey, mama!
Norway, huh?
Yeah, that's cold country. I like it hot.
We aren't in Norway yet. It's just one way of looking at it.
Attention!
Private Smith?
Yes, sir.
Carter?
Yes, sir.
McElroy?
Yes, sir.
Ramsey?
Yes, sir.
You're all to report to the CO at once. Never mind sprucing up. He wants you there in a hurry. Get going.
At ease, men. I want you to know Captain Olaf. That's his first name. Never mind about his last name.
Oh, these are the men, Colonel?
These are the men.
I'm glad to see all of you.
Thank you,
sir.
All right. Captain Olaf's commission is with one of our allies. I'm going to turn you over to his command. That is, if you're willing.
What? Huh?
We don't understand, sir.
I said, if you're willing. Because I want to make clear to you all that if you're transferred to Captain Olaf's command, it is on a voluntary basis. Let me outline what is on our minds. We're asking for volunteers among the men who are paraski troopers. The mission is extremely dangerous.
Maybe a little 6-5 against?
Possibly. But in any event, the objective is the destruction of certain key military installations on the continent.
Norway.
The Second Front.
Second Front? I don't know anything about the Second Front. And it's not your province to guess about it, nor mine. Maybe a certain country will be the scene of an invasion. If so, then your chances of coming back from this mission with a whole skin are somewhat enhanced. Not, your chances are, well, slim.
Either way you look at it, they're not very good.
You know enough to make your decision now. You want a little time to decide.
Count me in, sir.
Me too, sir.
I'm in this, sir.
Smith?
Huh? Oh, count me in, sir.
Supply Sergeant will issue your special equipment at once. You'll have 1 hour to write letters or whatever you want to do. That's all.
Now we're going to do something.
Well, this is a good feeling, yeah.
When will we be able to see something, Captain? Some land, I mean.
Why, is there much visibility?
Should be. We left all the rain down in England.
Then we should see some land pretty soon, if we are not too high up.
Say, hey, look at that sky over there.
Yeah?
What? Where do you mean, Smitty?
There. Over there.
Oh, yes. Just look at that.
Well, I will ask the navigator.
Hey, that must be some bonfire, huh?
Say, could that be Berlin? Berlin's pretty far away, isn't it?
I don't know what it is, but it sure is burning.
It's Hamburg. Our pilots finished their raid there about half an hour ago.
Hope we do as good a job where we're going.
You are listening to John Hall as Smitty in Soldiers in High Boots, a new radio play on the Cavalcade of America, sponsored by DuPont.
You're listening to listener-supported Swing Street Radio. Swing Street Radio, where the big bands swing. The sounds of the golden age of radio continue with Yesteryear.
You're listening to John Hall as Smitty in Soldiers in High Boots, a new radio play on the Cavalcade of America, sponsored by DuPont. As our play continues, Smitty, the farmer, Mac, and Texas, together with Captain Olaf, have set out on their first mission as paraski troopers. A fast army plane is speeding them toward continental Europe to a destination known only to Captain Olaf. As the plane drones through the night, the four men wait impatiently for the order that will let them see action at last.
Check your safety belts, men.
What's the matter, Captain?
Nothing, I hope. The pilot just called to me to say he saw some ships down below. We are hoping they're not Nazis.
What if they are?
And we would have a committee to welcome us as we float down, perhaps, huh?
I I suppose we ought to be glad we're in these clouds.
Man, I am glad.
Yeah, only I'd like to get a look at the country.
Listen, you wouldn't be able to see much. It's just beginning to get light.
Hey, where's Olaf? I've been having a little shut-eye.
Oh, he's up with the navigator. Telling him where to go, I guess.
Ooh, I'm cold. It's cold up here. Well, who's got a cigarette?
All right, everybody, get ready. We jump in a few minutes.
Jump? Into those clouds?
Well, we go down to 2,000 feet first. Well, you should be glad of these clouds, my friend.
Yes, I am, but...
But what?
Nothing, sir. Nothing.
Come on, let's check the supply chute.
No. When you land, you go straight to the supply chute, yeah? And I will give the orders at that time. Good. We are leveling off. In a second, now. You all check your chutes?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Ready, Captain Olaf. 2,000. Definitely lower.
Righto. Thank you.
Not a bit. Good luck. And good hunting.
Thanks again. Who makes it door? 1, 2, 3, 4, in that order. I should go last. The order is to jump.
That means you first, Smitty. Dive away, kid.
No. You go first. I'll jump after you.
Please, we must hurry.
Go ahead, Smitty.
My hands.
Come after me, Smitty.
Jerome!
Sorry, Captain. This happened before with Smith. Jerome!
Here I go.
Jerome! I'm all right now.
Jerome!
Goodbye, Captain Olaf.
See you again, Lieutenant, and thanks.
All right, now to business. The power station is that way, about 4.5 miles. I know all the trails through here. You will follow me. You all have your assignments. I think one thing. Smitty.
Yes, sir?
You were to carry a share of the explosives and guard the side entrance to the power plant while Mark attended to setting his fuses, right?
That's right.
Now, you will divide your share of the explosives among us. And Texas.
Yeah?
You will take over the task of guarding the entrance. It will leave the rear entrance unguarded till after I can return from the basement, but we'll have to take that chance, eh? It's arranged, huh?
But what am I going to do?
Sorry, Smitty, those are orders. That's all for now.
You mean I have no orders?
That's right. Don't worry too much, soldier. But just at first, perhaps it would be well if you stayed right at my hand all the time, huh? Until I tell you. All right, come on. We've got to hurry. The Nazis changed their guard at the power plant in less than an hour. There we are. Quickly now. Fuse number one. Check. Right. It is set. Fuse number two.
Anything I can do to help?
No, no, thanks. Check. Right. It is set. Fuse number three. Check. Right.
Believe me, sir. I'm perfectly all right.
These are wonderful gadgets, these mechanical fuses, no? I hope Mark is having as easy a time with his three charges as I've had with mine. No, a last look around. Two sentries. Dead and unmourned.
Do you want me to get over to the Raritan, sir? I still have my submachine gun.
No need to, I shall think. Just imagine what this will do to the Nazi, Smith. An hydroelectric plant supplying energy for every mine, every mill and plant for this whole area. It's a good night's work. All right, all is well. We have precisely 6 minutes to get out of the way of the explosion. Come along now.
I hope so. You won't think
I... Oh, good. There's our friend Texas. Got to pick up Mac and the farmer.
Quick, down.
Everything okay by you, Captain?
Yes, but what was that shot I heard?
I don't know.
Where are the others?
They were right behind me. There they are.
What's the matter? They're running. Mac, he's hurt.
Must have missed one of the sentries. Nick Mac in the leg.
I'm okay, but we got to get going out of here. I'll make it 5 minutes till the whole mountainside gets blown apart.
Anybody hear your shot? What about a Nazi sentry?
You beat it. Come on, we better do the same.
Get down. Get down. What a really shame. That was such a good beginning, too.
I think I can see where they've set up the machine gun, sir. How about I try to work around the side and come up
behind? They won't walk, Texas. They shoot you before you got 10 steps.
Say, where's Smitty?
He's right here, but... Where is he?
I was hoping I was wrong about that guy.
I never saw him at all.
We've got to get out of here. We must make a move. We can't just sit here behind this escarpment waiting for an explosion.
Less than 3 minutes to go, sir.
Now, what are those dogs up to now?
Oh, they're just taking pot shots, I think.
No, sir, they're not. They're shooting at... It's Smitty.
What?
Where?
Yeah, see, he's crawling along down by the big pipe.
He's got grenades with him. See him?
Oh, there he is.
Get down, you fool. Get down. Look out, Smitty.
He can't make it.
I think he can. He's just got that 10 yards to go in the clear. Then he can really toss that grenade.
Oh, Smitty.
He'll have to make his break in just a second.
There he goes.
Run, Smitty, run!
He got him.
No, no. He's not down. Look.
He's still got the grenade.
1, 2, 3. Throw it!
He doesn't dare. I don't throw it back at him.
There.
Come on, everybody, get to him as fast as we can.
Right, start down, you guys. Keep your heads low.
I don't like this.
Are we? Dave, all the Nazi states.
Smitty.
He's still alive. Here, help me.
Come on, Smitty, old boy.
Smitty, don't be doped, you guys. You gotta get away from him before this place blows up.
Nah, don't try to talk, kid.
Here, Texas, you take his legs. Careful.
No. Get out of here. You hear me? You can't do anything. Want me now?
We ain't got much time left now, Captain.
Get out of here. All you guys. You haven't got time to carry me.
He's right.
I'm sorry. I went chicken on the jump, guys.
Will you shake my hand, Smitty? Thanks.
Come on. We've got to go through those trees and down the hill.
So long, Smitty.
So long, Farmer. Remember the sparrow.
Thank you, John Hall. A little later in the program, ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Hall will return to the microphone to introduce our special guest, Captain John T. Berry. John Hall.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you. In presenting tonight's cavalcade, DuPont not only salutes an heroic branch of the Army, in Washington tonight, is one who suffered wounds. He is Captain John T. Berry of the Airborne Command which invaded Africa. Captain Berry brings us a first-hand report of the largest flight by air ever made by paratroopers. It is my privilege to introduce Captain Berry. Come in, Washington.
The paratroopers spearheaded the African operation with our objective, the capture of a strategic airfield in Algeria. Our first landing was relatively uneventful. The airport was already in friendly hands. But we were immediately sent on another mission and were attacked in flight by enemy fighter planes. We suffered our first casualties in this operation. 1 week later, we were on our way to Tunisia and jumped there to occupy another aerodrome, which is now used by our Air Force as an advanced base of operations. On December the 1st, our unit fought along with other infantry units at Faid Pass and captured the pass in 2 days, taking a number of German and Italian prisoners. In this report, I have been able to outline only briefly the operation of the first American paratroopers in North Africa. What our men did then will be fully recorded by history. What I will remember longest, however, will not be the military achievement of these paratroopers, but the courage and determination of the men who fought these battles. Next Saturday, Camp McCall, North Carolina, will be dedicated in honor of Private John T. McCall, one of the first paratroopers to die in the African action. In memory of this hard-fighting, freckle-faced American boy, Camp McCall is the first training center established by the Army to be devoted exclusively for the training of airborne troops. The paratroops who are carrying on in Africa and those who will follow in increasing numbers from Camp McCall to combat areas throughout the world are determined to avenge the death of Private McCall, and you can be sure they will.
Thank you, Captain Berry. Ladies and gentlemen, you have just heard Captain John T. Berry, Cavalcade's special guest for this evening, who spoke to you from Washington. They flew the Atlantic in a bomber. They were attacked in the air and on land, but like real troopers, they carried on, performing day and night for the men of our armed forces. You've read about them in the headlines, Kay Francis, Martha Ray, and Mitzi Mayfair, three Hollywood stars who will appear on Cavalcade next week in a salute to the entertainment world, Soldiers in Grease Paint. Be with us again next week when Cavalcade presents Kay Francis, Martha Ray, and Mitzi Mayfair in Soldiers in Grease Paint, a true account of three girls who risked their lives many times to entertain our men on the fighting fronts. Cavalcade is pleased to advise its listeners that John Hall is currently starring in the Universal Technicolor success, White Savage.
The musical score of tonight's program was composed and directed by Robert Armbruster. This is John Heaston sending best wishes from Cavalcade sponsor, the DuPont Company of Wilmington, Delaware. The program came to you from Hollywood and Washington, D.C. This is the National Broadcasting Company.
From April 26th of 1943, it's been Soldiers in High Boots, starring John Hall, a part of the Cavalcade of America on Yesteryear. Well, with that, we'll draw this edition of Yesteryear to a close, but we'll make a promise to join you again next week at this time for more of the best of the golden age of radio. Hey, why not invite a friend to listen, too? Meet us here next week for more of Yesteryear. Till next time, I'm Craig Roberts. Good night, Gracie.
Radio, remember radio. We'd sit and close our eyes and use our imagination. A comedy, mystery, a fireside chat. Together we sat, listening nightly to our favorite show. Radio, I miss you so. Dio, vodio, dodio, do.
SSRDB San Francisco, where the big bands swing.